Everyone, look, I'm coming. It's going to start. It only lasts for 5 minutes.
Only lasts for 5 minutes. It's going to start. We're talking about the eclipse, the annular solar eclipse, what's been described by Bob Robinson, member of the Salt Lake Astronomical Society, as for most people here, this will be the best single celestial event of their lives. Many people gathered, well, around the country, obviously, but in Utah, many people gathered near Canaraville. And our chief engineer, Friend Weller, was there. Full service. Engineering department, not only engineering services, but you brought us back some sound. We'll be hearing that.
Yes, it was a lot of fun.
And you were there with USU physicist Shane Larson. We'll hear all about the science. I want to bring in Chris Holmes at this point. Chris Holmes, thanks for joining us. Are you there?
My pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Our Southern Utah correspondent. We heard your piece yesterday. This was a big deal in Iron County.
It certainly was, and not only in Iron County, but, of course, Canaraville was on the so-called annular path. That made for a lot of excitement here. But there were viewing festivities going on at Brian Head Ski Resort, at Cedar Breaks National Monument, Bryce Canyon National Park, various areas in Washington County, and also Pipe Springs National Monument in the Arizona Strip.
I'm curious about Canaraville. This is a town of about 300. Somebody was on the ball with regard to tourism. Was this some city official, do you know?
Well, the Cedar City Brian Head Tourism Bureau was way ahead of the game on this thing. Astro-tourism has been a growing industry, and they had their ears to the track and could see that there was an opportunity here. It was very well promoted. And I believe, if the story, as I understand it, is correct, that it was actually a tourist calling in from some distant place that actually alerted locals to the opportunity.
Hmm. And, boy, they got a response.
There was a ton of people. I mean, yeah. Of course, you know, you can see the eclipse over a broad area, but Canaraville being right down, you know, I guess it's in the 50-yard line, let's put it that way. I mean, you could go to either end of the field and still see the touchdown. Shane Larson went down earlier in the day, and he said, there's way too many people down there. So we watched it from Cedar City, and actually we had, we weren't on the 50-yard line. We were on the 49-yard line. It still looked great. It was fabulous, and there were people everywhere. In fact, I-15 coming back, that's probably the most traffic I-15 seen on a Sunday evening, also night, for a very long time. So it was... There were a lot of people.
A big social event. So, how far away is Canaraville from Cedar City? Not too far.
What would you say, Chris? Maybe about 12 miles?
About 12 miles south of Cedar City. I myself viewed the eclipse from my backyard in Cedar City with my family. And I concur, you know, you couldn't have told me that we weren't, you know, that it wasn't a perfect ring of fire. It wasn't far enough away from the 50-yard line, as you say, to be able to make much difference by my perception.
Well, Chris, stay with us, and if you're able to, I don't know. We're going to hear Friend's piece. He was nice enough to put this together. This sets the scene for us. Talk about the science with Shane Larson. Here is our chief engineer Friend Weller's piece from Sunday.
Everyone, look! I'm coming. It's going to start. It only lasts for 5 minutes.
There it is!
Good morning and welcome to Access Utah. I'm Friend Weller.
Actually, it's afternoon.
That's true. It is afternoon. It's not morning, but that's okay because we're taping this. It's Sunday afternoon, and we're in Cedar City, of all places. And we're in Cedar City because it's a beautiful Sunday afternoon. But we're here to take a look at the solar eclipse that's going to be happening. Well, it's actually going on right now.
It's ongoing, yeah,
yes.
Right now.
There's already a chunk missing out of the sun as we take a look at it here through a couple of different telescopes that have the appropriate filters. And with me, Shane Larson, our favorite gravitational astrophysicist from the USU Physics Department. And let's talk about eclipses. I mean, this is live and in concert. It's happening right now. I've already noticed that I'm not squinting nearly as hard in what normally would be full daylight.
Yeah.
But we've already got, maybe a quarter of the sun's surface
covered?
Yeah,
so we're about 25% eclipsed at the moment. So we're, a half hour into the eclipse. It's going to last for another hour before the moon's fully in front of the sun. Mm-hmm. And then there will be a kind of an hour and a half afterwards as the moon's drifting off of the sun. But we're seeing two things now. We're losing light from the sun, but it's also getting lower in the sky. So you're losing light from the
natural filtering through
natural
the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's still too bright to look at with your naked eye. So.
And don't try this at home, kids.
Don't try this at home. Yeah, we're using filtered telescopes here. We have this is an ordinary telescope that has what we call a white light filter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of most common filter that people experience when you look through a telescope like this. You'll see sunspots and things like that. And then over here behind you, we have a hydrogen alpha telescope. And what these telescopes do is they only let the red light from hydrogen through. And that's a very useful light to look at the sun in because you can see prominences and filaments on the surface of the sun.
And we've already noticed that. We're just watching that, and it's just looking at the edge of that. It's like, hey, the sun's furry.
Yeah, it's got all these long, big arcades of, energetic material larger than the Earth being thrown up off the side of the sun. And you can see that in these hydrogen alpha telescopes. Unless the moon's in front of it.
That's true.
Which is what's happening right now.
Yeah, and it's going to get rather interesting because as the moon gets in front of it, everyone's heard of total eclipses, but this is a variety of total eclipse that's just a little bit different. It's called an annular eclipse. And why don't we talk a little bit about, perigee and apogee and all those good things that
sure.
make this a annular eclipse and exactly what an annular eclipse is.
So we live in a rather unique place in the solar system in that when we look in the sky, the moon is about the same size as the sun. And so that's why we can have these eclipses where the moon kind of gets in front of the sun and blocks it almost perfectly. But the moon's not a constant distance from the Earth. Sometimes it's farther away and it looks a little smaller. And sometimes it's a little closer and it looks a little bigger. And right now it's a little bit far away and it's not quite big enough to cover the whole sun. And so when it's in front of the sun, there will be an outer ring of sun that is still exposed that you can see around the edges of the moon. And that's this ring of fire that you hear people talk about.
Now, as far as eclipses themselves, of course, we know that, a lunar eclipse is when the shadow of the moon, or shadow of the Earth, covers the moon.
Right.
And in this case here, that's the shadow of the moon coming across the planet Earth. Why is it, this is something that I've been asked before just by friends of mine that, figured that I might know something. Why is it that you can see a lunar eclipse from just about everywhere on the Earth, at least on the dark side, compared to a solar eclipse where it's a narrow track across the surface of the Earth?
Yeah, so this is because of what's actually going on. So when the moon is casting its shadow, it's like you casting a shadow behind you. When you look out on the lawn, the shadow that you cast is very, very small. And so what we're actually seeing when we see the solar eclipse is we're standing in that shadow. We're seeing the sun being covered up. When we look at a lunar eclipse, what you're seeing is you're looking at the moon, which has moved into a shadow. And so you're not looking at the shadow itself, you're looking at the moon. And so if you can see the moon, you can tell if it's in shadow or out of shadow, the same way we can see that this grass is in the shadow and this grass is not in the shadow. And so that's kind of the difference between the two. When we're standing here in the eclipse, we're standing here waiting for the shadow of the moon to come zooming across us. And it's coming zooming across the western United States right now, down through Nevada, across Utah. It's going to go over Cedar City and south of here in over Canaraville.
Now, eclipses can be handy. I do believe that Captain Cook used an eclipse to his advantage over some unhappy islanders that weren't so thrilled that he showed up. And maybe a little science can go a long ways to at least maybe extending your life a few years.
Yeah, if you, one of the great things about modern astronomy is we know how these things work now, and we can predict things like eclipses. And, you know, in the ancient days, before we had a way of calculating these things in astronomy, you didn't know that these things were going to come up, and suddenly they would happen, and it would astonish you. And Cook, who had a little bit of astronomical ability, was able to, predict that this would happen to his advantage.
And then, of course, you know, the islanders, they're, you know, I guess if you go back even further, you know, just Earthlings everywhere. You know, it's one of the things that we have legends out of China of the dragon eating the sun,
yeah.
And unless we prayed to the right gods or made the right offerings or threw the right person into the volcano or whatever the case may be, then all of a sudden the dragon spits the sun back up,
right.
And we're all okay,
yeah.
Again.
So today, of course, the sun's not going to disappear, right? In 5 years, we'll have a total solar eclipse. We'll go through north of Utah, through Idaho, and then the entire sun will disappear. And you can imagine, right, if you'd never seen or heard of such a thing before, in the middle of the day, you're minding your own business, and the sun goes away. It'll get dark, the stars will come out, and you might not be confident that the sun's going to come back. But we know, of course, now it will, because it's just the moon moving in its orbit and going between us and the sun.
It reminds me of a George Carlin routine where he was talking about headlines, and it was something to the effect of, the sun did not come up this morning, big cracks appeared in the earth, and rocks were falling out of the sky. Details on this and other headlines in 35
minutes.
So now, what can we learn from eclipses, either lunar or solar? What do we learn about our little neighborhood in space, and how do they affect the Earth?
So they don't affect the Earth tremendously in terms of, you know, gravity or energy input. They're neat to look at, but in terms of our day-to-day lives, they don't affect us tremendously.
Maybe a little cooling,
a little cooler,
wind.
Yeah,
the chickens,
you know,
come into roost.
Yeah,
the flowers,
you'll hear the birds
up.
Start singing if it got dark, you know, things like that. But we can learn a lot, and indeed we used eclipses to our advantage early on when we hadn't sent spacecraft into the solar system. You can use eclipses to precisely measure the diameter of the sun and the diameter of the moon. You can use them to measure the speed that the moon's moving in its orbit compared to the sun. During a total solar eclipse, you can see the sun coming through around the edges of the moon, and so you can study the topography on the limb of the moon where you can't see telescopes normally.
Just looking
at
it in profile.
Yeah, just looking at it in profile. And so there's all kinds of neat things that way that we can use to probe the dynamics of the solar system, to understand better how the solar system is put together and how it moves and how it evolves in time.
Now, I understand that, of course, during, you know, an annular eclipse, we're not going to see this particular condition, or at least maybe not to the extent that we would with a total eclipse. But of course, if the eclipse is total, then we're going to be we can see streamers coming away from the sun, and, you know, take a look at, you know, more of the physics of what's going on with the sun. How does the sun power the solar system?
Yeah, so the sun is not a solid object like the Earth is, right? The sun has an atmosphere, and the very outermost part of it is called the corona. It's very tenuous, and we can't normally see it because the surface of the sun is so bright. And when the moon eclipses the sun, then you can see that corona on the outside, and that's very visible. We can make artificial eclipses, which is what we do with our satellites. We cover up the sun, and then we just study the corona. And scientists do this all the time because there's a lot of things going on in the corona, because the corona is the part of the sun where the atmosphere of the sun is blowing out into the solar system. And that blows to the Earth in what we call the solar wind, and it creates what we call space weather here on Earth. It affects the upper atmosphere, which affects our radio transmissions. It affects things like GPS, and it creates things like the aurora borealis,
mm-hmm. which are beautiful.
Which are beautiful displays, that's right. But that's all from the sun. This is something that we call sun-Earth connections. The way the sun interacts with us is through that streaming wind of particles that it's throwing off.
How far out does this streaming particle, the solar atmosphere, how far out into space does it go? I mean, obviously past Earth.
Yeah.
How far out?
So this is a big question we have. And so the sun is blowing its wind out into the solar system in every direction. And what we think... We're standing on the road here in Cedar City, in case you can't tell. Yeah.
Bye, Mr. Four-Wheeler.
So what we think happens is it blows out to a distance where the wind has slowed down enough that it is encountering the wind from the other stars in the galaxy. And so that's an area that we call the heliopause. It's the region where the influence of the sun's wind tapers off. And right now, Voyager 1 and 2, which we sent out in the 1970s, traveling towards the heliopause, and we're looking very diligently, trying to understand exactly how far away it is that our sun has influence.
Now, we're still in communication with those spacecraft then?
Yeah, they aren't doing a lot anymore, but we are measuring magnetic fields, we're measuring their speed and trajectories, measuring their radiometric data, trying to understand where are we in the solar system and how close are we to the edge of this sun's influence.
See, that's the thing. This is fascinating. This is real-life science that you don't have to be a smart guy. Obviously, I'm here.
Well, you know,
you're
we're
the smart guy.
With, you know, 10,000 people here in Cedar City, and we're using amateur telescopes and, you know, doing great stuff.
And that's thing, down, you were down at Canaveral earlier, and
yep,
you said
there were
about 3 million people down
there. Yeah, there were a lot of people in Canaveral. It's a big party. So Canaveral is the center of the shadow of the eclipse. It's going right over Canaveral, and they have it all set up. There's a lot of people down there right now. It's a big party.
But what's the difference between what we're going to see here compared to, say, like, what's going to be seen in Canaveral? And for that matter, there's our friend Lyle.
Lyle's in Logan.
He is conspicuously absent here. Otherwise, yes, he'd be joining this little radio party we got going on.
So the difference is where the shadow of, where the moon is going to go in front of the sun. Mm-hmm. So if you're in Canaveral, the moon's going to go right through the middle of the sun. Right?
Okay.
Now, we're a little bit farther north of that. So the moon's going to go completely in front of the sun, but it's not going to be a perfectly symmetric ring. It's going to be shifted off to one side.
A little lopsided.
A little lopsided. But if you go north to Logan or, you know, farther to Idaho or even farther north, then the moon's going to go just across part of the sun. It won't go right in the middle and make a ring.
Partial eclipse.
So that's what we call a partial eclipse. And so the reason all of us are down here in this part of southern Utah is because from Kanosh down to about Flagstaff, anywhere in there, the entire moon will go in front of the sun. It'll be lopsided or centered depending on where you are.
Now, I've got some friends over in Richfield that Monroe Direction, I was just with them earlier today.
Uh-huh.
And they're all, how long do we get to see it for? And I said, well, I believe it's going to be a shorter period of time because they're just a little off that center portion, but they're not out into the partial area. They're still going to see it, but again, more lopsided and maybe a shorter duration. How long are we expecting to see the sun go out, per se, here?
So the ring part of the annular eclipse will last about 5 minutes or so. So the moon will go into the sun, and that ring will first appear, and it will take about 5 minutes for the moon to get to the other side and cut the ring off.
And that's referred to as second and third contact.
Second and third contact, or that time when the moon's in the middle we call annularity, the time that it looks like an annular eclipse.
And then first contact would be when the moon first touches
right,
the sun.
Right, and we had first contact about 40 minutes ago when you could just see on the edge of the sun just a little, someone took a little bite out of it, a little nibble.
Mm-hmm.
And now more and more of it's coming out, and that will move across the sun. And when we get to last contact or fourth contact, the last little bit will be taken out of the far side of the sun.
Unfortunately, as I understand from our point of view here at roughly 112 degrees west, the sun's going to be below the horizon.
Yeah, it's going to be very close to the horizon. And given our topography, I bet we won't see last contact. Yeah.
It's going to be impressive.
It's going to be fun.
Let's take a look here. Let's take a look
through the telescope.
Yeah,
so
pick your scope.
Through this white light one. Okay, so it looks like, I can see some sunspots right now, but it looks like the right-hand side of the sun, in my view through the telescope, has been chewed out. It's like about a third of a bite out of an Oreo cookie. That's about what it looks like right now.
And we can see some sunspots?
There's some sunspots on there, yeah, if you take a look. Before the eclipse started, there were kind of three largish groups of sunspots stretched across the surface that we could see. And those are regions on the sun where the surface of the sun is a bit cooler than the rest of the sun. And so if you were to look at just the sunspot, it would be too bright to see with your eye. But against the rest of the sun, which is hotter, they look a little dark. That's why they look dark.
Now, these prominences that we can see, these filaments that are coming out from the edge of the sun, some of them are obviously larger, more, I don't know what would be the right word, they're better looking.
Yeah.
But now, would that be perhaps what a sunspot would look like if it was rotated around inside? What do we see, not so much coming from sunspots, but what activity do we see related to sunspots?
Yeah, so the sun is a very dynamic thing, and we're still trying to understand exactly what's going on with the sun. But what we think is that magnetic fields the thing that makes your compass point north here on Earth, drive a lot of what you see happening on the sun. And so sunspots, for instance, are places where the magnetic field is going up and down through the surface of the sun, and so it allows that region of the sun to cool more effectively.
Now, would that be similar to the magnetic pole here on Earth, where they shift a little bit over time?
Yeah, and so on the sun, the magnetic field is much more complicated than it is on Earth, and much more dynamic. There's a lot more energy in the magnetic field on the sun. The prominence that you see, those happen. If we go over to the hydrogen alpha scope here, the prominences that you see are regions where the sun has burst up and is throwing material off. And that often happens in what we call active regions around sunspots. And there, the magnetic field, again, is responsible for guiding that gas up and off the surface and back down. That's why it has those very pretty looping structures that you see in the pictures. Those the gas is following the magnetic fields on the surface of the sun.
Now, I've seen recently there was some footage on the internet where we saw a prominence that came out, and then all of a sudden it just kind of flared out and broke in the middle.
Yeah.
Extremely violent behavior.
Yeah.
How does that affect that? I'm assuming that's going to be part of this space weather that affects radio communications, the aurora borealis, so on and so forth here on Earth.
So the exact physics behind that we're trying to understand, but when the gas, what we call plasma, breaks out of the magnetic fields, it comes out very energetically in what we call coronal mass ejections. Just enormous amounts of plasma and gas come off the sun, and it streams outward in whatever direction it's going, and sometimes it heads towards Earth. And when it comes to Earth, it can affect our communication satellites, it'll make beautiful auroras, it can overload our power grids. You know, there's all kinds of effects that we've seen associated with these kinds of events.
It's handy that we have those Van Allen radiation belts
out there. Yeah, the radiation belts do protect us, although it's not clear that they can always protect us from very large CMEs. The most famous one of these was something called the Carrington white light flare, which was observed by Richard Carrington in Kew in London in the 1800s. And he was looking at the sun like we are today when there was a big flare. And the next day, all the telegraph systems in the country started exploding and overloading. And that's because this CME from the flare had reached to the Earth and affected us down here on the surface. It's no different than our power grid. The same kind of thing happens today, just with our power grids. So.
Well, let's see. We're going to be, if we take a look here, I'm figuring we're probably about another half an hour.
We got about half an hour till we reach annularity. So we'll be here, and we're going to have a good show. It's clear. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful afternoon.
It's going to be awesome.
Occasionally
we
have a little bit of wind. I mean, we've got a few clouds out to the east, but it's a spectacular evening.
This is
just fabulous. It's a lot of fun. So thanks for being with us on Access Utah this morning or this afternoon.
This afternoon. Yes. You'll hear it in the morning.
Yes, and we'll say hello to Lyle, long distance here. He'll hear us too, and I'd be interested to compare notes the next time the three of us get together
on
Access
great.
Utah. Thanks again, Shane. Shane Larson, our gravitational astrophysicist, and for Access Utah, I'm Friend Weller.
That's Friend Weller's piece from put that together on Sunday. Friend, thank you for that.
It was a ton of fun. I figured I was out doing some work at our transmitter sites in Moab and Vernal, and also a translator site. This is one that Brian's very excited about. We're adding Orderville. So
Orderville.
As you drive down the U.S. 89 corridor towards Kanab and the Grand Canyon.
What about Baker?
Baker's coming. Don't worry. But translator talk around the station here. But that's we're doing some service on the equipment, and it's like, you know, tomorrow's the solar eclipse. Let's just zip over to Cedar City. And Shane and I had talked about this in advance. In fact, we talked about this last time Shane was here for Access Utah a few months ago. And we talked about, May 20th is coming up, and May 20th has come and gone. And it was really fun.
That was great. We'll talk a little bit more about it. In fact, right now, we're looking for your eclipse experience. There's a lot of comment traffic to Jennifer Pemberton's story on our website. We thought, this has hit a nerve, and in fact, the thousands who streamed to Canaryville would indicate that. Front page coverage yesterday in the Salt Lake Tribune, this is a big deal. What was your eclipse experience like? Did you put on welder's glasses? Did you view it through a telescope? We're joined by Brian Earle as well. He's going to tell us his experience. And Chris Holmes, our Southern Utah correspondent as well. The number to call is 1-800-18 866-826-1495. What was the eclipse like where you were viewing it? And this, in fact, has been described in the Salt Lake Tribune by Bob Robinson, a member of the Salt Lake Astronomical Society. For most people here, talking about those viewing the eclipse, this will be the best single celestial event of their lives. We'll talk about that as well. So the number is 1-800-826-1495, or you can email us at upraccess.org. upraccess@gmail.com. Better get it right for people to have a chance
detail.
To upraccess@gmail.com. So Chris Holmes, I think in your report, I can't remember how many thousands, there were thousands who streamed into the Canaryville area.
Something around 15,000 into Canaryville, and as I mentioned earlier at the top of the program, various other venues throughout southern Utah and northern Arizona also hosted events.
That's amazing. And, friend, you were telling me it was like a rock concert. People applauding.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was funny. After third contact, when the sun starts coming back in full force and everything, there was a couple that were over by the side of the road. I don't know. They were doing their best to sing the Beatles' Here Comes the Sun guitar, and it was rather surrealistic. But, it was interesting. And you heard there at the beginning of the program, as soon as we reached second contact, so now the moon is completely in front of the sun, just this wave of cheering and applause. Now, you expect this like at a fireworks show. I remember one time years ago in Plain City when the volunteer firefighters were done lighting off the small firework display there. I mean, it was nice, you know, for a small town of 1,500, 2,000 people. People start, you know, and everyone's sitting in their cars because in Plain City, the state bird in Plain City is the mosquito. So everybody's in their cars, and as soon as it's done, everyone starts honking on the horn, you know, showing their appreciation. I guess, you know, applauding inside the car isn't going to be heard by the firefighters, mm-hmm. but honking your horn will. Well, here's people, and they're applauding and cheering, and it was just very interesting. Okay, we're applauding and cheering at something that, you know, a naturally occurring event, and I thought, well, that's very interesting. I just the way people reacted.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, there were, you know, folks going, wow, that's cool, you know, but it was just a neat display from humanity gathered en masse, and it wasn't something like a football game mm-hmm. or something of that nature. It was just a display of nature around us.
It's a celestial event. Brian Earle, you weren't on the 50-yard line or the 49-yard line in Cedar City, but you had a pretty good view of the eclipse.
I felt pretty close to it. I mean, we were on our back lawn sitting at the picnic table, and I had remembered it that morning, but then forgot all about it during the day, and thank goodness my neighbor stuck his head over the fence and said, here, would you like to see the eclipse? And, oh, eclipse! And so that put us right into that mode, because anyone who knows me knows that I'm more than a little effusive when it comes to getting excited about something like this. Mm-hmm. And so I grabbed his welding helmet, and we went running out into the street where there weren't any trees so we could get a good look at it. And I was quite surprised at how much of the sun was still covered, even in Hyde Park. Probably like about 3/4 of it was covered. And so we got a great look at it. And I was going up and down the street, you want to see the eclipse? And you know, we had the neighbors and the neighbors' neighbors and the neighbors' neighbors' family coming up from Salt Lake were there. And so we just had kind of a little party out on the street. Mm. So I was really pleased with it. And I stayed with it for almost the whole way.
This is unusual, as we've been saying, you know, a football game or some sort of man-made event, but a celestial event like this, to have this many people get excited about it.
Well, up in Idaho, come 2015, there's 2017, yes, up in Idaho, there will be a total eclipse, and the track will come right across, you know, Ketchum, Haley, Challis, just through central okay. Idaho there, you know, at least as far as close enough for us. I know we were discussing earlier why Canaryville. But that's because it was easy access to the 50-yard line right off I-15. Mm-hmm. This, you know, might be a little bit more, you know, more country roads. Mm-hmm. But it will be a total, not annular, but total eclipse. And then there's another one that will pass over Nephi, directly over Nephi, in 2035. I've jokingly told my family that you'll have to drive the old man down there, but right. Yeah, it's
so this was part of the reason that this was such a big deal is these don't come around.
Yeah, that's just the way the Earth moon alignment happens. I mean, the moon is always casting a shadow, but just the way the orbits are inclined and everything, we do not necessarily always get to see them. And we have to also keep in mind that the Earth is 70% water, and there's a lot of them that, you know, the track only runs out across the ocean. And like Chris mentioned earlier, the space tourism factor. There's people that go out on cruise ships all the time now. They'll lease an entire ship and go out there, and that's what they're looking for, mm-hmm. out in the middle of the ocean.
I'll bet you know this. What do you call the alignment of the Earth, Moon, and Sun? What's that line called?
Syzygy.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. You're impressing me. I don't know this stuff. I want to bring in Chris Holmes again, but let's first go to Margaret in Vernal. Margaret, what was your experience viewing the eclipse?
Oh, well, I didn't see too much of it here. I noticed the... there was quite a lot of crowd around, but there was a reduction in light. But I did see the one in the 60s. We were in Connecticut then, and that was a total eclipse. And we had a pinhole camera in the garden and had all the neighborhood children come and look at it.
That was a total eclipse at that point?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
And I wanted to... Are you open to us answering questions? What I noticed that they said in the description that the sun was letting out pieces from it, energy from it, I guess we could call it. Is the sun decreasing in size, was my question.
No, not at all. This is just natural phenomenon that's happened on the sun. Of course, you know, back in the 1600s, you know, and this is when I start hearing about astronomers that are first starting to observe the sun. It's just like, you don't want to do that without some sort of protection, or better yet, projection. Project that image onto the wall, because...
And no, so, I don't mean that. But I mean, he was talking about that you could see, I think you call them the solar flares.
Uh-huh, yeah.
The sun is losing energy.
I think it's...
It is losing energy. I mean... Eventually, it's going to collapse on itself.
Is it going eventually to disappear?
I think many, many eons from now, but I think it is losing energy.
Yeah, there is entropy. It is going on. But again, it won't be in our lifetime or in any lifetime near ours.
Right.
But yes, over time, it is losing energy. And there is, that might be a good topic for a future Access Utah with Shane. And we can talk about things such as,
that would be interesting.
5 million years from now. What do we theorize is going to happen with the Earth? And the sun, for that matter.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Margaret. Appreciate that. And I appreciate your previous experience. If you'd like to call that in as well, maybe you've had a great experience with the previous eclipse. The number is 1-800-826-1495. Margaret calling in from Vernal, 1-800-826-1495. Or email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com.
You know, it is interesting that even with as much of the sun covered as it was, I mean, I could tell that there was a dimming of light, but it still was, it's really light outside. So
yes.
That's a lot of energy that the sun is producing to continue to cast that much light, even with more than 3/4 of it covered. And again, this is in Hyde Park. What did you see when you were down there at Annular?
It was noticeably dimmer, and I made, and I can't believe Shane, I'm sure he's listening right now. Why didn't we look over our shoulders for Venus? Because there were a lot of people that were in that area. I've checked online stories that have been related on a number of websites, different postings saying yes, and Venus was very, very obvious from down in that area, you know, near the 50-yard line, as we've said, out during the day. I mean, you can pick Venus out during the day if you know exactly where to look, and you look up in the sky, and it's like, that's a bright blue sky, and there's a planet up there. But it doesn't happen often. In this case here, you know, with the shadow being cast on the Earth, makes it very easy. We did not look over our shoulder to see that. But yes, there was it was a lot dimmer. I mean, it just was getting dim. It was, it was like somebody had the sun on a dimmer, because the sky, everything got gradually. It wasn't like a cloud where it's like, okay, I'm standing in the shadow of a cloud, but everything around me is still quite bright. The mountains are still quite bright. The sky is still quite bright. No, everything was just kind of dimmed down. And it was just unusual. The wind came up just a little bit. Of course, they say if you're right in the very center of the track of a total eclipse and everything, it gets darn dark. You can see the stars, and it's I don't know. I can see why, several thousand years ago, Joe Spear carrier is out there, and all of a sudden the sun disappears.
That's got to be disconcerting.
A little alarming if you don't know what's going on.
Let's go back to Chris Holmes, our Southern Utah correspondent. You said you watched this from your back porch.
I certainly did, and I made two observations about this phenomenon, and one of them has to do with the conversation that's currently going on. Of course, there's a diminished amount of sunlight reaching the Earth because so much of the sun is being blocked, and it created kind of an eerie, otherworldly quality about everything. Literally, you're seeing everything in a different light. And so you begin, as Fred just indicated, you begin to understand why ancient cultures, without the mathematic and scientific understanding that we enjoy, viewed these phenomena with wonderment and even fear. And the other thing that struck me was that how much smaller the moon looked when it was a void of light rather than reflecting light as we usually observe it.
Hmm. I also want to talk about, and what was the scene there in your neighborhood? Were others out watching?
Oh, everyone, yeah. The entire neighborhood was out. Kids were running back and forth. We viewed the eclipse in two ways. There were these little eclipse viewing glasses that were available from any number of places. The schools were handing them out, the Tourism Bureau and so forth. And then we also observed it with the pinhole in a piece of cardstock against the back wall.
Hmm.
The other interesting thing was, you know, when the sun shines through a tree, there are little splotches of light on our back wall, and each of those represented the eclipse, and so that was interesting as well.
Now, and I don't know if, friend, if you noticed this yesterday, but I did. We turned and looked behind us, and our shadows were not
sharp. They were fuzzy.
They were fuzzy. It looked like I had projections coming out of my ears. Because
that's called good grooming. Projections coming out of your ears.
All right, but it was really interesting to see that it was not defined.
Yeah, they weren't sharp, and especially during the eclipse itself. Because if you think about it, instead of having a single point source of light in the sky, you actually have. It's not a single point. It's this, like we described, a ring of fire. And so as that passes across you and stuff, well, I mean, a perfect example is here in the room. I can look at the shadow on the edge of the color control unit where we bring the telephones in. You can see the shadows underneath the computers. Well, we have a fluorescent light fixture on the ceiling, and it has two tubes in it. Therefore, it has two sources of light that are shining down. If you reached over there and turned on the floodlights that are in the, the can lights and stuff, we would have multiple light angles. So you'd see multiple shadows. Well, the thing is, turn that on. Take a look at my hand. Notice how the closer I get, even though I get right down by the table, there's still a couple of shadows going on there because we have two different sources of light. Same thing with the sun. We've got, as the moon is moving across the viewable disk of the sun, we've got different light sources going on. So the shadows, yes, looking through trees. A friend of mine that was up here, he was using a neighbor's welder's helmet to look at it and stuff. He sent me a photograph from the backyard that he was in. Again, trees, he says, eclipses make for interesting shadows, So, but yeah, it's just kind of a lot of weird phenomenon, but it's all nature, it's all natural, it's all and it's all good.
And you do remember them. I mean, I remember one that took place when I was in junior high. Everybody got out of school, went out and looked. It was off to the east, and it was almost a total eclipse, but not quite here in the Logan area. So that would have been about 78, 79, something like that. And then we had one, I remember watching here at the station, would have been about 95. We were another partial eclipse looking at that one. So you remember these events. Mm-hmm. These things stick in your mind.
Chris, I'm curious about the crowd control, you might say. This is a Canaryville town of 300, and you had 15,000 people in the area. Did any problems go on? Did people were well behaved? This was like a rock concert.
It was, but everyone was quite well behaved. There were other jurisdictions from Washington County and various jurisdictions around Iron County that contributed to law enforcement at the scene. But to my knowledge, there were no problems.
And this was quite the opportunity, because you mentioned astrotourism. Is that what we call it?
Or you call
you
it that.
View the is that the proper term?
That's a good term. Yes.
Thank you. But here, as you said, you were on your back porch.
We talk about the eclipses happening every so often, but to be situated in an area so close to the center, really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I tried to impress that upon my children, and they were quite disappointed to learn that this wasn't going to happen any place nearby very soon.
Yeah, rewind that. I want to watch that again.
That's right. By the way, we have this is a forward. I don't understand all the technology. I think it's a text that's forwarded through Twitter. Anyway, we've received it here in our email. I'll read this. I don't understand it very well. The person says, I had to put on 3 pair of shades, red, yellow, and blue. Does that mean anything? Is that a safe way to view the eclipse?
Best way to view the eclipse is with, you know, a filter, these glasses. What was funny with these glasses that, you know, they're like $3 or something like that from the Clark Planetarium in Salt Lake, and people were selling them for $20 down in Canaraville. So it's like, okay, opportunity cost here. But yeah, there are safe ways. There's a lot of people have said, well, you know, I just looked through a CD. Well, there's a lot of ways you can dim the light from the sun, but not many of them will filter, you know, damaging light that you can't see. I mean, there's, you know, of course, you know, the brilliant dazzle of the sun, but it's, you know, your eye is still focusing UV and infrared as well. And so, you know, that's where you get most of your damage. Stacking multiple things together is probably not the best bet. Number 14 welder's plate is a popular one because it is heavy enough. It's a heavy enough shading that it will, you know, allow you to look, observe it safely. So, but just colored glass or, you know, a bunch of sunglasses or a stack of CDs or things like that, it's like, not a good idea.
Maybe not a good idea. There were a lot of comments reacting to Jennifer Pemberton's story that we had a few days ago on the eclipse. One of the people said, stick a couple pinholes in a cardboard box and look directly through those. And then there were others who said, no.
No.
You stick a pinhole and look at the shadow.
Look at the image that's being cast through. You know, you do the same thing with your hand. Just hold your fingers up together like
and
that.
And it's a reversed image.
It'll reverse, so left becomes right. But
so if you want, to future reference, if you want to look directly, number 14,
welder's plate.
Plate, or you were looking through a telescope.
Yeah, we had telescopes with special filters. I was, because the truck that we had was cram-packed with equipment, I didn't have room to bring my 4-inch refractor with me down there. But I've got a solar filter that goes into that. Shane had a couple of special telescopes. Well, one was an ordinary telescope with a special white light filter on it. The other one was a telescope that is designed to look specifically at alpha hydrogen. So you're looking specifically for I'm trying to think of the right word, but the light given off in that particular wavelength. And so I told him what would be fun is if we had one for the one and one for the other, and so you could look at green and red each through a different eye and maybe get a stereo effect going on.
That would
there.
Be cool. We do have a caller, and then we're running out of time. We have a commentary on the eclipse from our Jennifer Pemberton, and we have a Steve Eaton commentary as well. So let's bring in Merrill in Laverkan. Merrill, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going
that
well.
That was a fun thing on Sunday evening. What I used for filters was the Polaroid filters that we used to use in movie theaters for 3D movies, and rotating them so it canceled out almost everything, and was able to get a good view of the sun.
Polaroid filters. I'm trying to visualize that.
Polarizing filters.
Oh, polarizing. Yeah, okay.
They're two plates, and they rotate and stuff. It'll cut down the amount of light and stuff.
Well, that's creative. And that worked well for you?
It'll let almost a full transmission of light or down to absolute zero.
How much of the eclipse was visible down in Laverkan?
Full 100%.
So you were close enough to the 50-yard line.
I would say I was right on it.
All right. And was everybody out in your neighborhood?
Well, not everybody, but we had a few in a small crowd. Had one fellow that was next door to where I was. He's a welder. And naturally, he brought his helmets out, and I brought my filters, and then another fellow had a telescope projecting the image on a white sheet of paper.
That's all it takes.
And we saw it, and it was a fabulous sight.
A great opportunity. Won't come around again very soon.
Not for a while.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Merrill. Appreciate that.
Okay. Hey, thanks, guys.
Appreciate your comments. I believe we soon, within the minute, we need to go to the commentaries. Last words from you, gentlemen. Chris?
Well, it was a terrific experience. The children loved it. It was a great family experience. They learned a few things. My wife, who's a elementary school teacher, talked about the amount of buzz that went on in the schools relative to the science behind this thing. So it was exciting.
Good opportunity for the kids.
Sky and Telescope has a website. You know, just go to skyandtelescope.com, and there's a gallery in there where you can see pictures that people have submitted from all over the world, because this eclipse started over in the Orient, coming up across Japan and then down through the western United States. So there's pictures from all over, as well as footage from the International Space Station, where you could look down on Earth and see the shadow moving across the face of the Earth. Yeah, so skyandtelescope.com. It's on today's front page where they've just got, you know, like I said, links to the galleries, as well as a link to the NASA website that you can see the International Space Station viewpoint of the eclipse.
Coming up, and check that out. Skyandtelescope.com.
Skyandtelescope.com. All one word.
Brian, you get the last word.
Well, I was just going to say, to get 2 9-year-olds to say, cool, you know, it has to be pretty fantastic, and that's what we had last night.
Yeah. We've had with us in studio Brian Earle and Fred Weller, of course, on staff here. Chris Holmes, our Southern Utah correspondent. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for your reporting on this, and we're going to go to cover this more with commentary from Jennifer Pemberton next.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
I like to mark the passage of time by celebrating various changes in environment, historical accomplishments, and personal milestones. You probably know these better as holidays. Some are more widely celebrated than others. I don't know why I'm attracted to more obscure holidays. I guess it's because I'm attracted to the idea of holidays, but I'm not usually one for prescribed celebration. I was really excited about this month's annular solar eclipse. Most holidays are celebrated once a year, but some have shorter cycles. I celebrate the coming of Saturday every single week, for instance. And some are on way longer tracks. Eclipses have a kind of erratic schedule, but at least we have plenty of heads up for planning an eclipse party. This month's eclipse was the third solar eclipse I remember seeing. My first was in the fourth grade, out the window of my Southern California classroom with hole-punched viewing cards. My teacher scolded me for putting on sunglasses, telling me that I would burn my eyes out even faster that way. The 1994 solar eclipse was a total surprise to me. I was jumping on my backyard trampoline after school when I noticed the sun's reflection in the house window had a bite taken out of it. I pulled out the tail of my belt to reveal a whole train of little eclipses on the patio. I couldn't have been in a better spot for this eclipse. Utahns all over the state were blessed with good weather and dark skies, and while northern Utah did not see the famous ring of fire effect of a diminished moon's failed attempt at full solar blockage, what I experienced was no less enchanting. What I remember about the 94 eclipse, and what stood out during this week's eclipse, was the character of the daylight as the coverage approached its pinnacle. It doesn't get dark. It doesn't even get dusky. It gets kind of dim. Not a shadowy dim, and not golden dim like a sunset. It's like a regular sunny day, but taken down a few notches. In 1994, it got dim enough for the June bugs to start up their nocturnal chorus for just a few minutes before quieting down as the sun crept out again. This time, the sun started sinking below the trees across the street, but it was still strong enough to beam a whole scattering of eclipses on the side of my house as the blocked rays filtered through the leaves. I watched the eclipse in front of my house through a spotting scope projected onto an empty white box. My husband also rigged up some viewing glasses out of a space blanket. Some friends stopped by, and the neighbors came over, and some folks wandered along the sidewalk in the evening, completely unaware of the cosmic anomaly occurring during their evening walk around the neighborhood. I thought, if we were living at any number of times during the past, we would be really freaked out right now. I said so out loud, and the thought gave everyone a slight chill. What if it's not coming back? I think that was a valid fear from another time. But what if we stayed in that coldish, dimmed version of daylight? Well, we did, but only for about 5 minutes. And when we realized the sun was growing in size again on our cardboard box, we cheered. My friend described the eclipse as a resetting. like a brief chance at a do-over for something. Like the winter solstice, it's a cold, reflective time to remember the sun from the past and to worship its anticipated return in the future. She told me this just as the sun was at its most hidden moment during the eclipse, which didn't give me enough time to make a quick, eclipse-spurred resolution. But I held on to the thought. Throughout the sun's return, I kind of like the idea of turning over a new leaf in the middle of May when I least expected to expect my life to change. I'm looking forward to the next 29 months, until October 2014, when the northern U.S. will get another partial eclipse, and that time I'll be ready, with my hand hovering over the reset button. From northern Utah, this is Jennifer Pemberton for Utah Public Radio.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by USU's Anthropology Museum in Old Main. It's free Monday through Friday, 8 till 5, Saturdays 10 to 4. For more information, at visit anthropologymuseum.usu.edu.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
If you have a beautiful, evenly cut, deep green lawn that is your pride and joy, then I think you may be in on it. Don't ask me to explain what it is, because I'm pretty sure I am not in on it. All I know is that in a matter of inches, grass changes in my neighborhood. On one side of the line is my neighbor's yard, that is, every day, freshly mowed and manicured, and on the other side of the property is my yard. That looks like something that grew up in an abandoned Denny's parking lot. When it comes to lawn care, there are clearly some strange things afoot in my world. I spent most of my life in Washington State, where it's either raining or it's about to rain. Where I come from, if the sun comes out and threatens to burn our lawns, we just let them toast. None of my neighbors have built-in sprinkler systems. That would be like putting a bowl of water in your fish tank so the fish would have something to drink. It would just be foolish. When we moved to Logan, we knew all that was going to have to change. Some of our neighbors hire people to take care of their lawns. A crew shows up, unloads, and in an hour or so they've made everything look very respectable. It's like the Cat in the Hat in real life. Didn't take us long to realize that we were living in a grown-up neighborhood full of respectable people. Unlike life for my neighbors, there's nothing about our yard that happens automatically. It's true, we have an in-ground automatic sprinkler system, but it doesn't automatically turn on. In fact, every year we have to hire someone to come and figure out what's wrong with it. It takes about a week to give up fixing it on our own, and by that time, the only thing that's alive on our lawn are the weeds, which are spreading like tiny vegetarian landmines all across our yard. Eventually, we invite someone else to look at our perplexing problem, and they mumble something about turning our water on. They flip a toggle switch, and then they go. In all fairness, I must say this year, the person who helped us get our water going wasn't grumpy. He just kept laughing to himself. We had concluded the water switch was in this deep, tube-like hole in our front yard that turned out to be a, quote, sewage backlash overflow DEFCON decatheter. We'd accused his company of causing the problem by turning off a switch deep in this hole just to force us to hire them to come back and fix it for us. They had done no such thing. Now I'm grateful for the deep hole, because if I had been able to turn it off, I might have suddenly launched a sewer geyser in front of my house. This would not have looked good when contrasted with the lovely pond and waterfall my neighbor features in his perfect yard across the street. Just turning on our dysfunctional sprinkler system is no guarantee that we're on the path to normalcy, not even a little bit. Our inaugural sprinkler run would put any Las Vegas water fountain show to shame. They blast straight up in the air or lean into our fence and spray off the paint like they're a wayward Yellowstone geyser. Some of them hold their breath for a few moments and then blast all the water they can find in our house directly into the street. We live on a fairly busy street, and when we hear cars honking, we know our sprinkler system is on. It's humiliating. When we bought the house, the homeowner told us that people were always praising him for his plush green yard. Somehow, we've unintentionally spoiled that. I didn't waste any time either. One of the first things I did when we moved here was unpack my lawnmower and mow the lawn. Unfortunately, it took me about three trips around to realize that the lawnmower was on its lowest setting, so I had to effectively highlighted our unmowed lawn with a dirt path that drew a crowd of young people who wanted to know when the bike track would be open for business. We wanted to be good neighbors, so we hired a lawn service to fertilize the lawn, blow air on it, feed it grubs and poison weeds. Instead of matching the beauty around us, however, large clumps of excited weeds have sprung up in joyous weed explosions, and it's like suddenly we become home to the Burning Man Festival for crabgrass. We figured out these lawn care experts would fix that. They said no one knows how to kill crabgrass, but if we didn't put down their mystery anti-weed formula, it would get far worse. We're talking the Democratic National Convention for Weeds right in our front yard. Apparently, lawn care is a matter of faith in things that you hope for but can never see. As the lawn's gotten worse, I've grown more impatient. At one point, I threatened our lawn care company that if they didn't fix our lawn, we would put up a sign saying that they were the ones taking care of it. I know, that was mean, so I didn't follow through. I just switched companies, and now our lawn is getting worse, and they're telling us the same thing about the invincibility of crabgrass. I'm dumbfounded. I feel like pointing across the street and saying, "Green and clean," to borrow a line from famous author Stephen Covey. If my neighbor's lawns are green and beautiful, why can't my lawn be the same? It's not like we live in different time zones. That's why I figure they are in on something that everyone on my street is in on and they aren't telling me. Why am I afflicted, tormented, and cursed with blasting crabgrass and a possessed sprinkler system? I know, you probably think it's funny and entertaining, but it's not. It's a lawn tragedy. But I have a warning for you. If you think you can drive by my house to gawk, point, and laugh at surviving grass, there's only one thing I can say to you. You better keep your windows rolled up. This is Steve Eaton.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.